We're going to talk about husbands and their responsibility tonight. And I'm going to start out by speaking to the wives, because you're going to sit here after what I said and think, okay, I don't even need to be here because this is going to be for the guys. But you do need to be here. You do need to understand what we're talking about and what I'm going to say to them. Because, you know, whenever Eve was created, it was, God saw that it wasn't good for man to be alone, so he made a help meet for Adam. And that means simply a helper that's suitable for him. And that helper, you know, that's sometimes, ladies, I don't want to get too carried away here because it's going to take a little bit, want to pick and choose where they help. Well, I'm going to tell you tonight, you need to help them be what I talk to them about tonight. So keep that in mind. So as I speak to the husbands, understand wives and wives-to-be, young ladies that, of course, that are not married, I want you to understand this too, because this is what your husband, this is the kind of man you want to pick. This is the kind of man that you want to be your companion for the rest of your life. And those of you that are young and starting out with your marriage, like I'm not just making light of this. It is your responsibility to help them. I know Margaret has probably prayed for me many, many times that I would be more what God had created me to be as a husband. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And hopefully, there's two passages here. I've got them both, mentioned both of them. Whoops, what did I do here? Ephesians chapter 5 and 1 Peter chapter 3, and that's going to be the basis of what our discussion is. We will look at some other passages, but those are the two main ones. But right now, the husband is to love his wife. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 25, and we're going to look at the rest of this chapter in a little bit. In Ephesians chapter 5, verse 25, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. Now, I want to emphasize that, even as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. We will come back to that in just a little bit. And I want to point out, too, at this time, that love is not a feeling. I don't know the number of couples that have called me and said, you know, we'd like to visit with you. Our marriage is kind of rocky right now, and sometimes they say it's on the rocks, and sometimes it is. And we've heard that maybe you could help us, and so we've tried to do that. And oftentimes I'll point out, you know, at first start out and tell me what's your problem. Well, I don't love her anymore. Well, that's not a choice you have. You see, you're the husband. And God commands you to love your wives. So husbands, you have a wife. That's a command that you have from God to love your wives. It's not a choice that we have, and it's not a feeling. God doesn't command us to feel anything. He expects us to obey his command. And he commands us to love our wives. The problem is the way we understand love, or the way we think about love. But whenever the Bible speaks of love here in this particular place and other places as well, it's not talking about feelings. It's talking about doing what you're supposed to do as an individual, as a husband. So let's look at that. Feelings are not commanded. Love is an action, and therefore it can be commanded. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, 4 through 8, and this is a Revised Standard Version. I don't know why I'm using that. If I don't use the King James, I'll use the New King James. But I'm using this primarily because rather than the word being translated charity here in this particular place as it is in the King James that we're probably all or most all of us are familiar with, the word charity there, it can also be translated love. And that's why we're using this particular translation. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, 4 through 8. Now, this applies to more than just husbands. Of course, it applies to wives, too. But, again, it's a command. Now, notice the way love is defined here. Okay? And you young men that are not married, you're not married, are you? No, you boys are married? Okay, good. Shake your head. No, you're not married. Okay. Whenever you have a sweetheart and you come in and you want to tell your folks about her and you say, I love her, I want you to remember what we're talking about tonight and what constitutes love. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 4 through 8. Love suffereth long and is kind. You know what suffereth long means? It means being patient. And that's part of what a husband is to do. He is to be very patient with his wife and kind. We understand what kindness is and what it means to be kind. Love envieth not. Love vaunteth not itself. Love is not puffed up. Love does not behave itself unseemly. Love doesn't seek its own. It's not selfish. I think some young people talked about things like that this morning. Love seeketh not his own, is not provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in unrighteousness, but rejoiceth with the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails, and it never will fail you. Whenever we behave this way in any kind of relationship, any kind of association, when we as individuals behave that way towards the object of our love, it's never going to fail. If there's a failure, if there's a breakdown in the relationship, it's not a breakdown in love, it's a breakdown in our carrying out the command to love. Okay? I think we understand that. Love means being patient and kind. Love means not envying and boasting. Love means not being arrogant and rude. Not insisting on your own way. Not being irritable or resentful. Not being happy at the wrongs of others. Bearing, believing, hoping, and enduring all things. That's repetition. Okay? That's what love is. Now, how many guys... Now, you don't have to raise your hand. I know that y'all are really, you know, yesterday I was so surprised that you folks, you act like you was afraid to move. You know, I'm not going to single anybody out except David, and he moved. He got plumb out of their building. But I want you to examine yourself, and I want you to think of, anytime you ever failed any of these things, you ever been rude to your wife? Have a hard day in the field, hard day in the shop, hard day, whatever it is you do, and come home and be impatient with your wife? What's that gained you? Usually not very much, does it? How about insisting on our own way? Have we ever done that over the wishes of maybe our bride or our wife? Keep those things in mind. That's what we're talking about. And we have to get real serious about this and really make some personal applications to ourselves to make this really meaningful and to strengthen our relationships and to strengthen our homes and our marriages. And it starts there. I don't think there's a family here. I don't think it'd be a husband and wife. I don't think there's a set of parents here that have daughters that they want those daughters to grow up, if they're not already grown up, and marry men that will behave towards them that way. I imagine that every one of you as parents desire for your sons to be able to behave that way in their relationship with their fiancé or their new bride or whatever. See, that's going to solve all kinds of problems. Now, there's going to be times that we fail at that. You may find this very difficult to believe, but I have even stumbled at that a few times. Now, you can laugh at that because that's really serious. Margaret will tell you, I really had a lot to learn whenever I started out. We do a lot of premarital counseling now. We're doing that with a couple right now in Oklahoma. And you know what's interesting about that? I didn't even know what that word was. I didn't know that was a word, premarital counseling. I didn't even know what counseling was when Margaret and I was married. About the only counseling we had was Truman Teal sat down in a church pew and looked at us and said, okay, bud, this tonight, whenever we have this ceremony, this is what you say when I asked you this. And Margaret, this is what you say when I asked you this. Bud, do you really mean that? And Margaret, will you really mean that? And we both said yes. And that was the limit of our preparation for marriage by anybody that tried to help us. And things have changed a lot through the years for the better. Love and marriage are summed up in the phrase, as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. And this passage talks about Christ being the head of the church. Oftentimes husbands talk about them being the head of the family, the head of the wife. Okay, you know how what it is to be the head? That means that you behave towards your wife just like Christ behaved towards the church. What's the church? We're the church. We as individual members make up the body of Christ, which is the church. Okay? And what did Christ do for us? He died for us. He gave himself for us. The word that we have in the scriptures that guides us and tells us how to behave, this chapter in Ephesians especially, is this the case. It's a responsibility that God has given us towards our wives so that husbands can have the kind of relationship with their wives in the home that Christ has with the church. What kind of relationship does Christ have with us? Well, surely we know and understand. We're thankful for him, we love him, and we understand that he loves us. The church is the bride of Christ. Ephesians chapter 5, let's look at this chapter as we continue on. Ephesians chapter 5, 25 through 28. Husbands, love your wives even as Christ. Now count how many times the husband is to love his wife that's mentioned here. Husbands, love your wives even as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. Okay, now, the word here, I'm told, I'm not, leave this to these young preachers that are pretty sharp, comes from the Greek agape, not exactly the same, but that's where it comes from. And it's a different word than is used for the wife and her relationship with the husband. Do you know that in this particular passage, three times the husband is commanded to love his wife? Remember, it's not a feeling, it's a command, and a command can be obeyed, and God's not going to command us to do anything that we can't obey, that's impossible for us to obey. So he's commanded us to obey. You know how many times that God commands the woman to love her husband, to agape her husband? How many times do you think that's in the Bible? Zero. Zero times. It's not there. Somebody says, well, that doesn't seem fair. That seems kind of unfair. Well, I'll put it this way. I was, had to be clear. Y'all tape this, don't you? Doing a video of this. Oh, man. I do this. It's liable to be circulated, and then the person I'm going to talk about will probably see it and hear it, and I'll be in real bad trouble. I'm going to do it anyway. Because their marriage is quite strong today. Their marriage is strong today. For a number of years, Brother Terry Newell, an evangelist in Oklahoma, and I did a program at Red River, New Mexico. We did this for 14 years, and the program was a family enrichment program. Most of what we talked about was parenting and, you know, that sort of thing. But one year we got up there and we looked at all the people that had come, and there wasn't that many parents. They were all pretty young newlyweds. Some of them had just gotten married. Some had been married a couple of years, had a small baby or two. And that's the audience that we had. And so Terry says, what are you going to do? He always made me do most of this talking, you know. I said, well, I'm going to go in there and we're going to have counsel with myself and I'm going to come up with something else. So I did. And so we talked about things that we're talking about tonight and tomorrow night in this presentation. And I talked about some of the things that I've mentioned here, and understand this is not a church setting that we're in. This is in a convention center where we were at and we were gathered together. And I said, went through all of what we've kind of gone through, and I said, how many of you wives here would appreciate it if your husband could treat you this way all the time? And this one lady, bless her heart, she's from Oklahoma, not far from where I live. She bounced up. She's sitting at the bank. She bounced up. She said, I'd walk on coals of fire all the way back to Oklahoma if he would treat me that way. And his face got just as sooner crimson red as it could get, you know. And I felt so sorry for him. And a few years later, we visited with them, Margaret and I, to try to help out some of the problems. But I'll tell you right now, they're a very strong marriage today. And they've raised a wonderful family, and they're a great couple. But she said it all. The wives that are sitting by you guys, that's what they want. God doesn't have to command them to love you. He just needs to get you and get our, not just you, but he needs to get our head around the concept of loving our wives properly. And guess what? They're going to walk on coals of fire for us. That's what they want. They just want to be appreciated, respected, and honored, as we're going to talk about in just a little bit. Talk about honor. But in this particular reading that we read, there's three things I want to notice. Christ gave himself up for the church that he might do what? Sanctify her. What does sanctify mean? Well, it means sanctify makes us holy and righteous before God. He gave himself up that he might present the church, that's us, to himself in a glorious, splendid fashion. Okay? In other words, everything that Christ did, he did for us, his bride, so that we would be clean, so that we would be holy, so that we would be pure. And when God looks at us today, if we are a part of his body because of the redemptive work of Jesus Christ at Calvary, that's what he sees. And I know if we sat down and talked openly with one another, we would all be willing to confess our shortcomings and our weaknesses that we have. And we might say things like, I'm just not worthy of that. But because you've accepted the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, been buried with your Lord in baptism, you've become a new creature in him. And when God looks at you, you know what he sees? He sees purity. Because of what Jesus did. And that's what we need to do in regards to our wives. That they might fulfill the great mystery. All of that's in this reading that we just read. That he might sanctify her. To sanctify means to make holy, to make pure, to make people, the church, to be what God created people to be. And then what happened in Eden? Sin entered the picture and tainted that process. But whenever man was created, he was created to be this kind of person, to be holy, to be pure. Husbands are to give themselves up so the wife can be what she was created to be. See? Whenever I misbehave as a husband, and I don't do that with Margaret, it keeps Margaret from being able to be what she was created to be, what God wanted her to be. That he might present the church to himself in splendor, as I pointed out a while ago. Ephesians 5:27, that he might present the church, to himself, a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. I gotta hurry here. Margaret tells me I spend too much time on this part. Husbands must, and I need to do it the way she says, husbands must find a way to glorify and exalt the wife in every area of their life. In the family circle, when you go to Thanksgiving gatherings, and you make comments. Has anybody ever made a snide comment about their wife? Maybe pinched a little bit there on the side. Margaret and I have used bigger hands now. We pinch one another. It used to just be a little. That was very disrespectful, wasn't it? I just violated the very principle I'm trying to establish here. But you get the point, don't you? You understand what I'm saying? We don't want, when we embarrass them, that's not an expression of love. That's not presenting our wives to ourselves in a glorious fashion. When our family sees that, or her family sees us together, they should see how much we love our wives, how much we care for them, how much we're willing to do for them, how much we respect them, how much we honor them, regardless of some of the things that may be going on in their life. They may have challenges. They may have issues in their life. It may be sickness. It may be any number of things. But that doesn't give us the right. In fact, it just raises us up to be exactly what God created us to do, outside the family circle, in our own thinking, always thinking these positive thoughts, these good thoughts about our wife. Being courteous, avoiding sarcasm, avoiding bitter and sharp and unwarranted criticism. And then finally, the third thing in this Ephesians chapter 5, that they might fulfill the great mystery. What's the great mystery? And that's oneness. Let me read this passage again. Look at the highlights I've got here, if you can catch that. So ought men to love their wives as their own body. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. No man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as the Lord, the church, for we are members of his body, of his flesh, of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, shall be joined to his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Sometimes people just focus on the physical here, that they might be one flesh, just like what? Christ and the church. Now, think about this. Oneness. And I think it's a mystery to people outside the body of Christ. I hope it's not to you. And if it's kind of fuzzy a little bit, I hope maybe I can not make it worse. I don't want to make it fuzzier, but hopefully maybe we can make it better. It should be a great understanding to the Christian, or at least it should be. Christ loved the church, and he cannot help it. It's his body. He can't help it. Christ is not going to do anything to his body that's detrimental. He's not going to hurt it. He's not going to harm it. He's not going to insult it. He died for it. He died to establish it. He died that it might be pure, that it might be holy, that we've already talked about. It's his body. He can't do that. That's oneness, folks. And that's the way it needs to be with husbands and wives. Christ loves the church. He cannot help it. It's his body. We, the church, make up his body. If a godly husband's really implementing these principles that I'm talking about, happens to be bitter towards his wife, something happens and he gets real bitter towards her, it can eat at him, or it should eat at him like a cancer. It should just gnaw at him and work on his own heart until it shows in his work. It shows in his activity and his association with other people. It shows that he's unhappy because he has harmed and been disrespectful to that part of him that's his bride. Okay? Husbands, work, golf, y'all play golf out here, fishing, their entire life suffers as a result of a squabble with the wife. Somebody said, boy, that's not my husband. We have a squabble. He's ready to get out of there. Well, maybe he's growing. Maybe he just needs to grow a little bit. But I imagine he probably suffers more than you think. Okay. The teaching of the Apostle Peter. Let's look at that. 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7. Now, there's a lot in this chapter prior to this, but we're going to save that till tomorrow night. 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7, likewise, you husbands, dwell with them, who's the them? That's the wives. Dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. Okay? So let's look at that. Dwell with them according to knowledge. What does that mean? Knowledge. Well, you know, there are people approach this a little differently. I mean, I think it means using intelligent leadership. Use your head about what you're doing. It's not just, well, go on. It means applying the knowledge that we have. We need to learn about our wife. Margaret and I, when we were married, like I said, we didn't know beans about the way we were supposed to behave and all. And if there was a mistake that could be made, I probably have made it all. We went to California. I was on leave from the Navy whenever we got married. And I had come home. We got married. And I think I mentioned this Sunday morning, borrowed $350 to get married and drive back to California. And that's saying something whenever Truman drove all the way from Dell City to Wayne to perform the marriage, and he didn't charge us anything. And anyway, we get married. And we go to California. We have this money set aside to rent us a house. And during a tour that I was overseas, prior to our getting married, I had asked a lot of my shipmates that were married. I said, how much is Navy housing? People had the same rank I did, made the same kind of money I was making, and would that she would receive also in her allotment. I said, how, what kind of, and, you know, Navy housing was $70 a month. And I know people said, wow, boy, I'd love to get something for $70 a month. But $70 a month was about $5, $10 more a month than we really had to buy. But I saw this ad in the newspaper when I got to California, National City, which is a suburb of San Diego, close to the naval base where our ship was tied up. And, the ad said, little house for rent, furnished, all furnished, $60 a month, all bill paid. I couldn't get to that address quick enough. And I parked on the street, and I went up and knocked on the door, and a 13-year-old girl came to the door, and I said, I see there's a house for rent. Is it still? Yeah, it's out and back. So she took me out, and they had little teardrop trailers out there. They had an old van that they had turned into living quarters for somebody. Back then, you could rent anything, you know. But there was this little bitty red house all by itself, 60 a month. Had an extension cord run from the main house. That was our electricity. And every time people would start watching a lot of stuff or had using a lot of electricity, well, breakers would flip, you know. But anyway, I looked at that and I said, hey, man, this is a godsend. And I said, we'll take it. And, you know, I never even considered her, and that kind of hurt. I didn't know it for a long time. This was her first house. She had never been away from home. She was 18 years old, weren't you, hon? You were 18 years old. I was 21. She had never been away from home. I'd been halfway around the world twice. But she had never been away from home, and here I didn't even let her see the first house. And finally, when we did talk about that, I told her, I said, hon, I said, there wasn't a whole lot of choice here. That was one of the best deals I ever saw. She said, I know that. But you know, it would have been nice if I could have seen it before we rented it, see. And I didn't take that into consideration. It's little things like that maybe we need to stop and think when we think, okay, I need to make these decisions. I need to decide. I need to, you know, do the right thing. But we need to consider our mates, consider our wives, because, you know, their input is very important in these situations. Let me move on here real quickly. Giving honor to our wife, it means to help whenever she has a need, whatever that need might be. We need to look for that need. Be considerate and show courtesy to make her feel important. It's your role as husbands. My role as a husband. I told you the other day I'd tell more stories than you wanted to hear. And I got another one for you. We had this fella aboard ship not too long after Margaret and I was married. He'd come back from leave, and I think Kentucky was where he lived originally. And he had gotten married, like Margaret and I had, about 6 months earlier. He had gotten married. His name was J.B. McCluckey. And we invited J.B. and his wife over to our house one time to visit, and she was a little odd. We were serving supper and drinks, and the glasses we were using at supper was what Margaret's little grandmother. We were all poor, man. I mean, we were stinking poor. You hear the phrase "poor as dirt"? You don't know how cheap dirt is in Oklahoma. We were poor. And her only thing her grandmother could give her was these glasses. And I said something about us using her grandmother's snuff glasses. I'm not going to ask if there's any ladies here that dip Garrett's snuff and can remember the snuff glasses that Garrett's snuff came in. Well, that's what they were. And Little Miss Money, that was her name, dipped Garrett snuff. And she gave us a set of those glasses, about 8 or 10 or 12, something like that. And we treasured those. And that's what we had, those snuff glasses. And I told you this gal was a little different from wherever she was from. And she started to take a drink, and I said that, and she put that, and she said, "What?" And I said, "Snuff. That's what they sell snuff in." And she never touched it again, never picked it up. But J.B. would come aboard the ship, and he would complain about his wife, and he would talk about her. Do I need to tell you that their marriage didn't last a year? It didn't last very long. Why? He didn't know how to treat a wife. He didn't know how to show respect. He didn't know how to honor. And he wasn't a Christian. He wasn't a godly person, and that contributed to his poor conduct in regards to his wife. How honor gets placed on the back burner as time goes by. Let me share this with you. I looked at this on my PowerPoint. I thought, I don't know if I ought to give this lesson or not. This is kind of silly, a lot of this stuff. I saw this somewhere, and I thought, I need to copy this down. I might be able to use it someday. 7 years are the 7 ages of the married cold. You know what a cold is? Sneezing, you know. And runny nose, okay. First year, they're just married. They've only just within the first year. Sugar, this is what he says. I am so worried about my baby. You have a bad sniffle. No telling where it'll lead. I'm going to call the doctor. I'm going to put you in a hospital. I know the food is bad, but I'll bring you your favorite from Red Lobster or whatever your recipe is. Second year has the cold. Listen, darling, I don't like the sound of that cough. And I called Doc Miller. I'll just pick that name up there. Called Doc Miller to come over. You stay in bed like a good girl, and I'll take care of you. That's second year. Third year, maybe you better lie down, honey. Nothing like a little rest whenever you feel punk. I'll bring you something to eat. Do we have any soup, by the way? Fourth year. Look, dear, be sensible. After you feed the kids and get the dishes washed, you better hit the sack. Fifth year. Why don't you get yourself a couple of aspirins? I got to go to work. Sixth year. Why don't you gargle something instead of sitting around and barking like a seal? This is not the godly husband, by the way. The seventh year, for Pete's sake, stop sneezing. What you trying to do? Give me pneumonia. See, honor is the major way a man shows headship. That's the way we express our love, through the honor, and it's all the time. It's not just when we want to do it. It's all the time. And at the times that is the toughest sometimes, when they're sick, whenever they have a problem, when they have a challenge, it's very important. I would come home. Margaret was, she talks about, she's a stay-at-home mom. Anybody here know what the Dale Carnegie courses are, were? Got some head nods? Well, Margaret was making up the first one. I had already been through the course and was going a second time, I think. And she was making this up, and we had to go to Oklahoma City for her to do this. And in the first session, the way they would do that, they would have everybody come up, and you had to speak at every one of these sessions that you had. You had to make some kind of public speech. And there were 46 people there, and these people had all made their speech. And what they had to do that night, they had to stand by on the table, put their hands on the table, and just tell people what their name was, what their occupation was, and where they lived. That's all they had to do. Margaret was the last one to go. And this was up in Oklahoma City, just a few blocks from the state capitol, and 22 ladies ahead of her. Everybody there had a master's degree or a PhD. They were all, it didn't make any difference that Margaret was valedictorian, summa cum laude in college and all that. It didn't make her, she was nothing but a straight-A student. They all had professions, and they told what their professions was. My name's Jane Doe. I live here in Oklahoma City, and I'm a doctor's assistant. I'm a registered nurse or something like that, you know. And I'm not making fun of that or those people. Please don't think that I am. Sounds like it, though, doesn't it? Margaret gets up there. She's white as a sheet, white as her hair is now. Her hair wasn't white then. But she was just as nervous, perspiration. I thought she was going to pass out. I really did. Her knuckles was white. She was gripping that table. She said, "My name's Margaret Jones. I live at Alex, Oklahoma." Tears come to her eyes. Bless her heart. Tears come to her eyes. She just shrugged her shoulders and said, "I'm just a mother and a housewife." And run and sat down by me. And I grabbed her and I said, "Don't you ever, ever apologize for the most important profession that any woman can have." There was nothing wrong with the other professions, but there certainly wasn't anything for her to apologize about in regards to her particular profession. The wife is to be honored. Honor is serving all the time. Young people talked about service and serving here today. It demonstrates the headship whenever we honor, when we express love, and we do it with honor. Again, headship is shown through loving service. Matthew chapter 20:24-28, you remember Jesus spoke there, and he spoke about service. Those that are greatest among you are those that serve the other, not the one that's being served. John chapter 13:1-15, shortly before Jesus was crucified. And what did Jesus do in this particular chapter? He began to wash his disciples' feet. He came to Peter's feet, and Peter said, "Not my feet, Lord." He said, "If not your feet, if I can't wash your feet, then you have no part of me. Wash me all over." Oh, it took a while for Peter to get the idea, but he finally did. Philippians chapter 2:6-7, another one that the young people looked at today. Humble. Be humble. Be the kind of servant, just as Jesus was that served us. Being heirs together, that's also in this particular reading. Being heirs together. In fact, what did the passage say? "You husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, that your prayers be not hindered." And being heirs together, okay? Togetherness does not exist if we exclude our wives from our world, from our likes, our dislikes, our time, our needs, our time. I have met with couples that she goes on her vacation, he goes on his. He has his checking account, she has hers, and they have their problem, and they're sitting at the table with me. See, I'm not saying that they can't do that. That's possible. But the idea is we need to share with one another, and that's the role of husbands, that we might do that, that we might be heirs of salvation together. "Let your prayers be not hindered." Prayers is a symbol of our dependence on God. Now think about this for a minute. Our relationship with our wife helps determine our relationship with God. Now think about this for a minute. Wife and husband and wife bicker back and forth, back and forth. They're snapping at one another. It's Wednesday night. And they're snapping at one another. But they hurry and they get around and they go to church. They're not going to miss church because it's Wednesday night and their congregation where they go, they worship or they come together on Wednesday. And so they hurry to get to church. When church is over with, maybe the man gets up and gives the lesson. Maybe he leads a song. Maybe he leads the prayer. When they get through, he doesn't speak to her all the way home. He's all sold up. Still got this problem. They go to bed that night. He turns one way. She turns another. They don't have that normal goodnight kiss. And it goes like this for a week. Has that ever happened? No, that's never happened with anybody. We don't do that. Wouldn't think of that. But then Sunday rolls around, and we come back to church again. And here we are, trying to be the good Christian man and leader. You see the problem there? What does this particular fact, that your prayers be not hindered? If that doesn't demonstrate our religious life, our prayer to God, our speaking to Him, I don't know what does. And to think that that might be hindered simply because of my rude or my lack of honor towards my wife and the way I treat her. We have a tremendous responsibility. Listen, I know we have a responsibility to provide for our family. We're to an infidel if we don't. I understand that. And I know that's a heavy responsibility. And I know it's tough. My son burns the candle at both ends. And we left Oklahoma. He was cowboying for one guy on Saturday. He worked all week welding and such like. Friday night he cut hay. Saturday he's helping a guy cowboy his cattle. That was the idea anyway. Saturday night he's back in the hay field. This is hay that he's cutting for himself and his horses. And he's going to do that. After church Sunday he's going to be back and hauling the hay that he bales back to his house. And he does that pretty much by himself. So that's what we expected him to be doing when we left Oklahoma. We got Facebook pictures of him and the kids and Tiffany, our daughter-in-law, and they're all over at Sulphur, and they're in the creek and Little Niagara Falls, and they're swimming, and they're having a ball. The hay's still in the field. The horses will be fed. The cows evidently will be taken care of on another day, but they enjoyed themselves and they went back the second day. I was never more proud of my son in putting those things that were important. They're important to him. Tiffany knows they're important to him. And she would never do anything to force him to do that. But he recognized quality time with his wife and his kids, and he did that. And I'm bragging on my son, but I can't always do that. I'm going to tell you right now, I can't always brag on him, but this time I can. And I appreciate that. But that's what we need to do. Understand. Our relationship with our wives determine our relationship with God. Let us not forget that. You know another story? Oh, my goodness. One more story real quick. Fish again. We've used Peter as an example. We're still talking about Peter here a little bit. What was Peter's occupation? Preaching the gospel. I know it, but when Jesus found him, what did Peter do? He was a fisherman, wasn't he? Okay? And he's married. We know Peter had a wife. Okay, now I want you to picture this. I'm making this up. Young people, guys, I'm making this up. Don't go tell some of your friends that this is in the Bible, because it's not. Okay? Peter comes in, and he's had a tough day. He's had a tough day. He knows what the Lord expects for him to do, but he's still got to make a living. And he's been out fishing. He hadn't caught anything. And it's been one of those dry spells as far as fishing is concerned. but he still smells like fish. You know, he's got it on his hands, and if you've never experienced that, it's tough. So he comes in, and he smells food cooking. He comes in and walks over to the stove, and he looks at it, and he says, "Oh, my goodness, don't tell me we got fish again. I have smelled fish for all week long, and here you fixed fish again." And she's worked all day trying to ready his arrival from work and coming to be there. And so she just buries her face in her hands, runs in the bedroom, slams the door shut, and he hears this click that locks the door. You didn't know they did that back then, did you? Well, anyway, we'll pretend that they did. She falls on the bed, and she's crying. And he stomps outside in the backyard. That's never happened to any couple here, has it? Never. You guys are, this is just like an auction. You're afraid to move. And he walks around, and as he walks around the yard, he thinks, "Man, I need to pray about this." And he tries, and it just won't come out. And he starts thinking about the way he behaved, and he starts thinking about how hard she works. You know, did I make a blunder? And he goes over in the corner of the garden, and there's one lonely rose growing from a rose bush. And he picks that rose, walks back to the house, picking off the thorns where it won't stick her, goes back in the house and gently taps on the door and says, "Honey," and he hears the bed springs. They had bed springs of some kind. And she gets up, unlocks the door, and lets him come in. And he says, "I'm sorry." Anybody ever experienced anything like that? How many of us haven't experienced something like that, where we have behaved in a way that wasn't appropriate for us, but it just slips and it just happens, and then we respond. And when we respond with apology and we respond with tenderness, don't they usually accept that? That's the attitude that we should have. Ephesians 5:33. There are mutual roles between the husband and wife. "Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife, even as himself, and the wife see that she reverence her husband." Each person in the marriage relationship has to fulfill their responsibility to Christ for it to work, regardless of what the other person does. Regardless of what the other person does. I will let him be the head. But whenever he quits behaving like he should, then I'm going to quit behaving like I should. That doesn't work. We have to keep on. I've had wives ask me, "What do I do? How do I handle that? How do I handle it when he..." I said, "You keep being what God created you to be. You be the kind of individual that God wants you to be. You be the kind of loving wife that God wants you to be. And here's one thing you can do. You pray for him. You pray for him and you pray for you that you behave yourself properly." I didn't think of that. Margaret did. She tells these, and by the way, older women teach younger women. Margaret doesn't like for me to mention that because every time I do, people start calling her. But that's okay. That's what she'll tell you to do. But you keep doing that and you keep being the kind of person that God desires that you to be. Now, I think the success of a good home and a good marriage lies heavily on the husband. I really do. Husbands are the head of the wife as Christ is the head of the church. It's our responsibility. Wives has a role to play. And tomorrow night we're going to talk about that. And it won't take nearly as long as I have taken tonight. Okay? We're going to be real quick with it tomorrow night.